The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer. Season 2, Episode 9 features Vitaly Pechersky, CEO of StackAdapt, in conversation with Justin Cook, Chairman of Demand Exchange.
Good afternoon and welcome to Advertising Week Europe here in London. I am delighted to be joined by Vitaly Pechersky, who's the CEO and co-founder of StackAdapt. Vitaly, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Excited for our chat.
Likewise. So first of all, give us the rundown on StackAdapt.
Yeah, StackAdapt is the easiest way to understand about what we do is we're a programmatic advertising platform. So brands and agencies use our software to run programmatic advertising campaigns across the internet. The evolution of our product over the last 10 years has been pretty rapid. So we started with something very narrow and we focused on a format called native advertising, which was very relevant at the time, which was focused on mobile. And we said, we're going to transact it real time. So we called it programmatic native advertising. And so that was our way into the market. But you know, I myself worked in the industry before, so I firsthand experienced the pain of not having the product that we ultimately ended up building. And so the product was born out of personal frustration and sort of still is work in progress 10 years later. And, you know, in many ways, our vision for where we need to be just only accelerated in the last couple of years. So feel pretty excited about where we are.
And where are you?
Well, 10 years later,
yeah.
So we started in Canada, in Toronto. Yeah. So we still have about half the company, about 500 people in Canada. And then we have about, so total almost 1,100 people globally across, selling across 16 markets. I've been here in London for the past 4 months. So just giving a little bit more love to our European and UK clients, the team here, and I've been really enjoying it. But yeah, I think it's a very exciting time in not just programmatic, overall marketing technology or advertising, because it's just changing so rapidly. And that's something that I fell in love with day one when I got into this industry. Even though I studied finance, I joined a small startup that did advertising. And once I understood kind of how the internet, you could see how the consumer behavior is seen online through advertising, and that to me was very fascinating. And I think the rate of change has only accelerated since then, and it's just as exciting as ever to be in the space.
And how did someone who studied finance actually go on to build a global business like yours?
So, you know, it's interesting. So I went to the job I got out of school, and I studied finance. I was looking for a job in investment banking or commercial banking. And the job I got was a small ad tech startup where I walked in the office and I basically asked, you know, I'm here to inquire about this account manager role. To which CEO said, do you know anything about advertising? I said, no. He said, why don't you go and study everything you can over the weekend, come back on Monday. And so on the weekend, I studied just my butt off, learned everything I could in 2 days. And on Monday, when I came in at the end of the interview, he said, come in tomorrow with your laptop, start. And so that's how I got into this industry. And, you know, but the beauty of this industry is that it's changed so much since then. You can't really go to school to learn the latest and the greatest. In many ways, we're inventing the industry as we go. So when people come and ask me, you know, they start a job in our company and they say, like, what resources can I use to learn more? I'm like, in many ways, you should just pay closer attention to what we're doing, because we're shaping, alongside many other companies, where the industry is heading.
Holding a mirror up to yourself when it comes to marketing.
To a healthy extent, yeah.
And what sort of lens do you think, coming from a kind of financial background, has for you when you look at marketing and where it's going and how you build StackAdapt?
I think naturally being quantitatively strong, very well led into advertising technology, which is all about data. You know, being a co-founder and now a CEO, naturally my job is a lot broader than just marketing. So understanding how it all comes together in the business, it's very relevant to my original education in school. But I think the transferability of being very quantitatively strong to where the demands of a marketing job today, it's very relevant. As much as I do believe in the importance of creative, but in today's world, I would say the predominant narrative is around data and analyzing data and making data-driven decisions. So very important.
I mean, you've talked about data there. You've talked about how fast the world is moving and how things are changing. Tell me more about the trends and opportunities that you sort of see in the B2B space, particularly that you're excited about right now, and why.
I think it's, B2B space is changing so rapidly, and I sort of reflect back on, for example, beginning of COVID and just how much the B2B marketing changed since then. You know, when people could not attend conferences, to fully shifting towards demand generation and online. Right now, I think the job for marketers is increasingly harder because the economic sort of uncertainty still remains, and absolutely both consumers, well, in the B2C space and B2B space, buyers, they're still holding on some of the spending. So it makes marketing and sales jobs much harder. And arguably, it's maybe what the job was before COVID. And I think we got a little bit of a frame of reference of 2021 and thinking that was like the new norm. The truth is, like, we're back to how difficult marketing was maybe in, 2016. With B2B, I think the big opportunity now is that there's that much more demand from marketers to stand out from the rest. You know, there's, the space is so crowded, barriers to entry are low. There are B2B companies in every pocket of the market. So in order to stand out, you have to be different. And I think it just gives a tremendous opportunity for marketers to think more like a B2C company, less than a B2B, and take risks and be just something that people will actually enjoy interacting with. Like I just yesterday saw this ad from ZoomInfo, I think Finding Gold, and it's kind of like a throwback to Western, and I thought it was just so clever and it was fun to watch, and I was like, this is a, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, a fairly dry B2B brand, but they had such a great creative, and you can see how forward-thinking brands are really leaning into this B2C-like advertising and creativity. And I think, you know, another opportunity that's presented in front of B2B marketers is that, you know, kind of piggybacking off of the innovation that we've seen in B2C space, you know, maybe with personalization or dynamic creative optimization, being really multi-channel across many different channels, like digital at home or connected TV, like the most progressive B2B marketers are really leaning into like what into strategies and tactics that have been historically pioneered by consumer brands, and that's where they're seeing a lot of success now, and that's potentially one of the big opportunities now.
No, I think you're absolutely right, and the idea that B2B brands now are building almost a kind of consumer kind of sort of a strategy, you know, in the way that they're communicating is everywhere in terms of out of home. You know, look at some of the big successful B2B brands, and that's a great opportunity, right? As you said, from a creativity perspective. And then, of course, you've got, you know, new technologies which are disrupting and transforming. You know, another release of ChatGPT overnight. So, and I'm not going to expect a 101 on that one right now, but tell me kind of how you feel like these new sort of technologies are, you know, changing the landscape, I suppose.
Well, you know, with respect to AI or generative AI specifically, I think every company is now trying to see where it's going to fit into their business. And I think, you know, I saw recently a chart on the applications of generative AI in solving multitude of different problems in B2B space. And overwhelming majority is basically related to a creative or content generation. And I think it's a very obvious application. and, you know, essentially you're just blogging into, you know, and one of those services, and you're able to produce content or produce, you know, text, which is, you know, in my view, a fairly light, I think it's maybe centralization of workflows makes it a little bit easier for customers to interact with these technologies. But I think it's a far shot from what it can do down the road. I think where every business is still so early on in figuring out how we can really create a ton of value for their customers. Like we employing generative AI across multitude of platform capabilities with StackAdapt, but only a fraction of it is introduced to our customers. A lot of it is still experimenting, experimentation or development stage. And, you know, the truth is that, you know, we would not be building it unless we were very certain that people will find value in it. But until we actually get it out and see how much people use it, it will be hard to know to what extent it creates value. Will it be the sole reason why people choose to work with our company just because of some generative AI capabilities on the platform? I don't think so. I think in the B2B space, there are some companies that maybe solve a very narrow set of solutions, and maybe AI will be very transformative for them. But for companies where they have more like a platform approach, where you work with different types of customers with different types of problems, I think implementation of AI, it's not going to be like a flip of a switch and then suddenly your platform is totally transformed. It's just going to be incremental improvements that will make hopefully the quality of life better for our customers. Maybe improve retention a little bit, improve their success, improve their efficiency. But it's not, you know, in enterprise software, it's going to be hard to jump kind of zero to one.
Mm-hmm. And that's a very sustainable approach, isn't it? Sort of taking that kind of incremental kind of strategy. Tell me a little bit more about how you think about growth marketing at StackAdapt.
I mean, marketing is, as soon as you pause on marketing, you're starting to feel that everything is becoming harder. And I think one thing that we learn is that you need to be, you should never go dark. You should always stay top of mind. And in times when, you know, maybe there's uncertainty internally or externally, you know, maybe there could be a knee-jerk reaction to say like, oh, let's, you know, we're not sure, so let's just be quiet. But I think in many ways you should do the opposite and sort of lead with a message of sorts. So I think staying dark is probably the thing that we learned that we should never do, and just stay top of mind, try to stay relevant. You know, in our sort of the way we think about our marketing is we try to, like we're doing so many things. We have a team of about 50 people on the marketing side, so we do a lot of different things. But if I was to sort of think about, you know, the way I think about great marketing and what I've seen historically work really well for us is just trying to bring it back to both customer problem or pain point and a concrete solution that we have from a product perspective. And whenever we've been able to talk to the problem of our customers very very succinctly and very precisely, we've realized we're able to capture their attention that much more, because suddenly you get a response of, oh, they really understand my pain point. And that was an evolution for us. You know, we started with a platform essentially saying we're a programmatic advertising platform. You know, marketers across any industry can work with us. That is very hard for a buyer to associate, well, how does that actually translate to my pain points? And as soon as we start verticalizing our business and start asking ourselves, well, what do marketers in a B2B space really struggle with? What do marketers in retail or e-commerce or healthcare struggle with? And at this point, we have separate engineering teams, solutions teams that are building products that are deeply interconnected ultimately because it's one product. But the way you use the product or a specific set of capabilities they're using, it's ultimately talking to a pain of a specific one of our customers. And once you start talking, once marketing is so deeply interconnected with the product, I think it's naturally resonating a lot better with customers. Obviously, you know, translating this very tactical product marketing into like a brand marketing, it's a challenge of its own. But I think it, at the end, like you should sort of zoom out maybe on that pain point, but still sort of really communicate your deep understanding of the customer pain.
And with a team of 50, how do you keep them swimming? How do you keep them in the light? How do you enable them and empower them to kind of keep kind of, you know, stop going dark, right?
I think we've done a good job with aligning our product teams with marketing teams. So they have, between product, marketing, and sales, really understanding how we're innovating around specific platform capabilities, for example, as it relates to the way customers use us. And so we have this ongoing conversation between like what actually resonates, what are our customers talking about, how... So we're both very active with sourcing feedback from our customers. So we have annual surveys that we run with them. We have ongoing rolling surveys with new customers. And all that information is fed back into our product team. But I think another thing that we've done well is just building a culture of feedback from our team as well. So our teams know that they can come to product team and say, like, hey, I spoke to a customer. They provided this feedback. And they know that this feedback will be taken seriously. And on a product team level, all this feedback is consolidated and actually acted on, well, with post its own their own evaluation. But I think we've built a culture with our customers and our team that we're a company that actually really listens to what the feedback is from the customer and how can we meet them with solving for it. I went on a little bit of a tangent there.
That's okay. That's good. It's really good. And just, you know, also I think people would be really interested to hear how you've structured the team. And, you know, at a high level, can you kind of give me a bit of a rundown of those 50 folks, you know, kind of roles, responsibilities? How do you design a team for a business like yours?
So it's fairly, like in many ways, standard, mm-hmm. a model that maybe is, you know, we have obviously digital marketing, we have event marketing, we have marketing operations, which is our team thinks is in part one of our keys to our success,
yep.
Being able to really dig into the data that our team is producing and how, you know, all the leads are flowing through the system and so forth. One area that maybe is not common is that our investment in design, like for us from day one, it was very important. It started with product design. We wanted to build a product that people like using and something intuitive, but it naturally extended into marketing. And we've always valued great design. And I think it helped us raise the profile of the company and seem bigger than we were at the time. Now we're a decent size. But then naturally we've been trying to regionalize teams and so that we have local coverage in Europe or Asia Pacific and so forth. So not tremendous, like I'm not sure, like we've experimented with a number of models, but I'm not sure if org structure is something that, you know, is an area of innovation we need to necessarily focus on. I think there's low-hanging fruit that we can do that will be more impactful.
Give me a flavor of some of those low-hanging fruit.
I would say clear alignment around company goals with what marketing is doing. I mean, it touches to more than just marketing. So having clarity around where do you need to go in, for example, next 5 years? How does that trickle down into specific things that you're doing over the next year? What specific project? What are the areas that are critically important for our business? I think having continuous dialogue and continuous communication around what matters for the company helps our marketing team to then have that lens to be like, oh, okay, this is an area that we really want to over-index when we communicate to our customers. So it starts at the top. You know, without that direction, it's really hard for marketing to know, well, of all these million things, million features, so many different types of customers, what actually matters, right? And where do we need to spend this proportionate amount of time?
And I think I'm going to ask a follow-up to that, which is, I think it's great. So aligning company goals to kind of what the team is doing. How do you measure that at StackAdapt from a marketing perspective?
I mean, ultimately, you know, we try to measure success, like depending on what level of fidelity you're going. I think at different levels you look at different things. You know, when we sit down with executive team, you know, we look at things at a fairly high level. You know, are we ultimately hitting our revenue targets, how fast we're growing, you know, what does our bottom line looks like, and then you can spot some trends, and then you can zoom into a specific area of the business and say, well, how does, for example, how does our new cohorts of customers expanding, how well our cohorts of new customers retaining? And then, you know, you can set up set of hypotheses and say, like, okay, well, for example, imagine that cohort didn't retain as well. You can then try to understand, well, what happened with it, right? Have the source of these customers, for example, been different in that month or during that quarter? And you can naturally go to marketing and say, like, well, you know, we've seen that last quarter customers, they didn't retain as well. Could we understand, have we done something differently, right? And maybe they can look into, well, what has been the source of leads, and try to, and essentially that's, you know, it's an ongoing sort of set of conversation we're having throughout the company. It's just like, you can peel back all the, like, we have a pretty large like revenue operations team and financial planning analysis teams, and like everybody's just trying to understand business better. And it's you know, I'll lie if I tell you that we know our business 100%. Like, it is complex, and you know, it's a constant search for answers. And as much as we invest in analytics and data warehouses and all this infrastructure to support answering these questions, there's just so much data. There's so many things you could be asking. And knowing what questions to ask is a challenging thing on its own. So it's a you know, we're learning.
Always learning. I think really interesting you talked about sort of, you know, kind of the harder numbers of cohorts and retention and so on. So moving further up the funnel, I suppose, top of funnel type activity, what's your perspective on demand and lead generation in today's B2B market?
I think it's, you know, to expect somebody to come in, you know, naturally when people think about demand generation, they think about search, for example. The minutia of trying to optimize search to realistically expect to acquire a very motivated user around your brand is tricky. When people, and so as much as we do demand generation, I think we also invest a lot in upper funnel strategies, because without them, it's really hard to expect people will search for you in the first place. And yes, absolutely. At the demand generation level, we can spend a lot of time optimizing for specific KPIs. You know, we can look at cost per acquisition. You know, we ask our account executives to score the leads that are coming their way, so we can use that as a way to add basically a qualification layer of like what quality leads are coming from which channels. But at a brand advertising level, I think a lot of times we just want to have fun and just do something that's, you know, we'll have people notice it. You know, we 2 years ago we made an ad with an agency, which is, you know, just kind of drawing parallels between business and sport and competition, and they sort of proposed StackAdapt as kind of like a, in this ad, it was like symbolized by a toaster. And we're like, at first we're like, toaster, this is random. And then when we went live, like so many people were like, why toaster? And we're like, I don't know. We just went with it and it seems fun. And then the recent ad that we produced in-house, we actually 3D printed a toaster, like a physical toaster, because the first ad is like a 3D animation. And so we physically printed a 3D printed toaster for the next ad. And even though we only had two ads, but people was like, why is StackAdapt always obsessed with toasters? Like it's not, it was just, we did second one as a follow-up, as a bit of a joke, but, and if it gets people talking about it, that's, you're successful.
And how do you create that sort of culture of growth and innovation within your team?
I mean, you've got to experiment. I have some ideas which, you just need to think of like what can realistically backfire in a bad way and, be extra cautious about those things. But a lot of the times is just see what happens, let's try it. And, what's the worst case scenario? Or like understanding the consequence between different decisions, what is really consequential that's going to be hard to undo. If it's just a question of spending a little bit of money to run an experiment, that's fairly low risk. So I want us to continue trying different things, and those experiments don't even need to be very large. But if something feels, and maybe that this is easier for me to say as a CEO and co-founder, is like you develop like maybe a almost like a gut sense about certain things. Like maybe you want to follow that gut and just try it. And I urge our team to think in that way as well. Not everything can be supported by data, and sometimes in order to generate data in the first place, you just need to run an experiment and make sure that our downside is protected. But a lot of times we're not taking such risks that we need to even overthink it. Just try and see what happens.
And alongside 3D kind of printing toast, what else are you kind of excited about? What else are you kind of experimenting with right now?
Lots. We're moving at 100 miles an hour at this point. I think the generative AI certainly is a big conversation for everybody, and we have a lot of excitement internally of ways it can be implemented throughout the product, and so we're working on a number of projects related to that. An area that was maybe a little surprising that we've gone that way is we built almost like a creative set of tools on the platform, which historically we've been always focused on distribution. Essentially, clients come to us, they have creatives, they can run it on the platform across the internet. But we realized that a lot of times clients struggle with making good creatives. They maybe lack either resources or sometimes the know-how of how to build something that works. And so we originally started a small creative services team that basically was tasked with, let's just help our clients make better ads. That team has grown pretty substantially over the years. And then with generative AI, it kind of forced us to think, how can we really scale this out to more of our clients? We work on a fraction of our clients because there's only so many hours in a day from this team. So we build and launch a destination where you can build ads yourself, and this is going to be a playground for generative AI as well. And sort of suddenly we realize, oh wait, going down that direction allowed us to essentially have this like end-to-end solution where you can build creatives, run them, measure them, and it can essentially unlock insights throughout the entire customer journey, or like that value chain, all the way from where the user is at, where they're seeing, how they're interacting with the ads, how they're interacting with the website, how they're buying, what is their worth. And we're still in fairly early stages, but the path is fairly clear. And we're building a lot more in that direction now.
That sounds amazing. And of course, then you bring that back into the process, right? Because you've got the full circle.
Exactly.
Your use of data point brought to life. So let's just sort of cast our minds forward and really think about sort of, you know, how you see B2B marketing shaping up in the coming years?
So a little bit of what I was saying earlier, I think it would be fun to see more creativity from B2B brands, you know, break the mold on the dryness that oftentimes comes from B2B, but making it more fun, more human. And I think COVID brought it very forward that, you know, at the end of the day, those decision makers, those executives of those companies, they're people like everybody else, and they have their lives at home. They have certain set of hobbies. They're consuming the same content. And how can you use consumer channels to reach those users? And it comes down to data. And I think evolution of, you know, for example, things like targeting evolving from something so broad as being able to target specific organization to evolution towards really one-to-one user identity to understand that, you know, this user is maybe spending 2 days at work a week, but then the other 3 days they work at home, and you can reach the same user across whether they're at home or at work equally effectively. That's the direction that it will go to. Certainly, we'll see more B2B companies. I think I've said it earlier, but tapping into new emerging channels, connected TV, streaming radio, digital at home. Historically, it was just, you know, not thought by a lot of companies, and especially with programmatic, because the barriers to entry are so low. It just becomes a lot more democratized for smaller brands to be able to advertise across these channels. So it's going to be pretty exciting to see.
And what next for StackAdapt and all of that?
Building like crazy. So at the end of the day, you know, we're a technology company, so it all starts with and ends with the product. So this year we're investing a lot in the R&D, and you know, our ambition to go into all these directions, you know, comes back to like, well, somebody has to build it. We're leaning into B2B. We're leaning into all these other industries, and we're building creative sets of tools and all this first party data integration. Like, all of this needs to be actually built and commercialized and monetized. So it requires a lot of talent from the team to make it possible. So definitely a focus on innovation, R&D, bringing the right people, making sure that they're successful, and listening to clients as much as possible, because everybody's in the same boat right now. Everybody's learning, everybody's figuring it out. So exciting time, exciting time in the world of the internet.
Vitaly, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer.